all of that. I understand.
Okay, so there it said it was being recorded. So thank you for that. So, okay, I have three statements. So do I have permission to record our conversation?
Yes.
Do I have your permission, Janice, to name you and I as the creators of this interview?
Yes.
Do I have your permission to share this interview on the COVID-19 archive online through the link that I sent you through email, and I'll send it again?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So now that we got the formalities over, so what I intend is I'll say my name and I'll ask you to spell your name. And then I just have a couple of questions. And at any point, we can take the conversation in whatever direction. The framing for this, of course, as you know, is we're doing this online archive, which has been just this amazing opportunity to collect people's stories about COVID and the range of experiences. So all over the place. And my connection is, the archive is based out of Arizona State, but my connection is I teach museum studies and public history at RIT. And in the midst of the craziness that was the spring, I had my students creating content for the archive. So that was my link in, and I've been working in it ever since and volunteering to get stories and connect. So, today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. My name is Julie Decker, and I'm in Rochester, New York, and I'm interviewing Janice Gilliard, who will spell her name shortly, who is in another location, and she will tell us that in a moment. We are connected via Zoom, and we are doing video Zoom, but the recording will be the only record of this conversation. So, Janice, if I could ask you to say and spell your name and tell me the general location, like city and state of where you're
located. Sure, no problem. My name is Janice, J-A-N-I-C-E. My maiden name is Cross, C-R-O-S-S. And my last name, married name, is Gilliard, G-I-L-Y-A-R-D, and I reside in Summit, New Jersey.
Thank you very much. Now, we don't know one another, but our connection is Joycetta Pierce, who is the director of the African American Museum of Nassau County. So I'm so grateful that she connected us and told me about your story, and I went through and read. So let's just start there. So please tell me, before COVID, because I know this is a COVID story. Before COVID, what was an average day like for you?
An average day was me going into work. I am a customer care manager for Panos Brands, and I work with small business clients as well as consumers. So I handle all their inquiries. I set up new accounts. And my full day was in Linden, New Jersey, working for Panos Brands and taking care of all of our clients, a small business and consumers, and answering any queries that they may have, making sure that their products are shipped out in a timely manner, and resolving any conflicts that may have arisen. And I also manage a staff of one. It used to be three, but they had to cut back. But, you know, we're managing and adjusting. So also just guiding her and providing assistance where needed. And then also if they need feedback regarding products and reports, and information in terms of how consumers feel about the products and how we're handling things, then providing that information as well. So that was my typical day running customer service for a food production company.
Wow, that's busy. And then in terms of like anything outside of work, did you have hobbies? Has genealogy?
I do. First of all, my husband is a pastor, so I'm a pastor's wife. So that's very involved. And with the transition of COVID, you know, doing everything from home. So I'm assisting him with that. I actually manage the Zoom services every Tuesday and Sunday. That's part one. Part two is my daughter, who was in college. She's a first year student at Syracuse University. She had to come home in March. So that was an adjustment as well.
Yeah.
Having her home, but she's working and managing and coping. It's an adjustment. This is new and scary for her, so we've had to have several conversations to reassure her that we will get through this. Yeah. And then the other part of it is hobbies. I'll start out with my small one first before I head to the big one. One of my favorite things to do is to crochet. And so I enjoy making blankets and scarves, and that has turned in over the years, the past 4 to 5 years, actually to like a small mini side business where I get so many requests to make blankets and baskets and sweaters and hats, and I love it. So that's the other thing that's very calming and soothing for me during this time. My favorite all-time hobby is genealogy. And I've been doing that for the past, say, 25, 26 years. And I have found some amazing information, things that I never, ever thought that I would encounter. First of all, as an African-American, I thought it was almost impossible, you know, to make a lot of progress, like some of the scenes that you see on the television programs, right. Finding your roots and thinking that that could never happen to me. And it has. Again, researching for 25 years, finding out that I had ancestors, one who founded a college, two that were professors at a university. They traveled to England and Liberia. Another one was finding ancestors that fought in the Civil War. And so for me, genealogy and history, I've always been a history buff, but then starting the genealogy and then seeing how your family lines up with that is just mind blowing to me. Still, I'm still in awe and amazed at all of the things that I've found. My favorite thing that happened to me is about 4 or 5 years ago, I met a woman and she invited me to a genealogy group. So I came, there were about four people. And I thought, how cool is this that I have an outlet and a place to go to share, you know, the little bit that I am finding and some of the major finds that I was starting to find. So after I had been there for about 6 months, 7 months, going every second Saturday of the month, they said, well, we need a vice president. You should do it. And I said, no, you should find someone else. I'm too new for that. And of course, I did. And I was vice president. Everything went so well that I was vice president for 2 years. They amended their bylaws and said, well, could you be vice president for one more year? So I served it for 3 years. And then after the 3 years, they needed a new president. And so they said, would you do it? And I really, really did not think that. I was like, okay, that's a little bit different. Vice president working with someone, I'm not sure if I'm ready for that. And I thought about it. I prayed about it. And I said, you know what? I think I can handle it. And I'm not that person. I have to be very honest with you. It's just my nature. I'm a very humble person. I like working in the background, but there was just something in me that said, you know what? You can do this. And I'm doing it and I'm scaring myself because everything is going so well. We went from having four members to me going out with them and eventually speaking to now we have, at one point we have 40. With transition and all, we have roughly 30 to 32, we have four more people that are coming on. So the membership has grown. We are doing more. We had to stop our meetings in March. And I said, okay, well, what are we going to do? I said, well, I'm going to learn how to do Zoom, use Zoom. And someone showed me what to do, how to do it. Her name is Deborah Robinson. She's an amazing person that showed me what to do and how to do it. And so we've been able to actually continue meeting, not only meeting, but our last meeting, and I'm really happy and excited about this. I watched a television program, saw this one segment. It's called Roots Less Travel. And I said, you know what? I'm going to reach out to that mother and son. That program was outstanding. It was phenomenal. I reached out on Facebook and talked about how much the segment had an impact on me. And then I thought, why not invite them to come be a part of your next meeting? And they said, yes. So the mother was in Missouri. The son was in California. We met two times before our actual meeting, and we actually had special guests. And I was just amazed. I was like, I can't believe I pulled it off. If you go on my Facebook, I have a Facebook page. If you go on my Facebook page, you'll see where I put, I thought about it, acted on it, and we made it happen. And I had one other woman work with me. We coordinated it. It was amazing. I actually had the nerve to say, you know what? I'm going to invite some of the big wigs in the genealogy world. And so we had the new president. She's the first African-American to be president of the board certified genealogist. I asked her, she's actually a DNA cousin. She found me and she said, yes. A couple of other people, they said, yes. So I had all of these experts and then these TV guests on this segment and it just went so well. Another crazy thing I decided to do was there's an author. I watched his program and he's with another person. And I said, oh, we should do Zoom with the author. I'm going to reach out to him and say, you know, look, we're starting this new book club. Would you come on? Would you join us? And he said, yes. He goes, am I your first guest? And I'm like, yes, you are. So this will tie into the story that Joyce Setta told you about and how she and I connected. What I feel and what I'm starting to feel is that my ancestors, overcame so much. And if they could overcome that, okay, we're dealing with the pandemic, but we can survive anything. I'm here because they refuse to die. They refuse to quit. So it's, what is it for me to ask someone? All they can say is no, but everybody's been saying yes. So
so amazing, Janice. No, it just the determination, but also your willingness just to try something new and and not be afraid. I mean, like stepping up to the leadership role is incredible. And then thinking like, okay, let's invite these people from Roots Less Traveled. Let's see what they say. And just think how meaningful it is for them to know that you heard their story or listened to it or whatever, and you cared about it and you thought it was impactful for your group, you know, halfway across the U.S. This is incredible. That's so amazing.
Well, let me know if you want to know how. So I said it and I met. I'll tell you what happened there, because this is mind blowing, the next part. So whenever you're ready.
No, go for it.
So basically I do the newsletter for our group, and I sent it to our membership, and then we have friends of the group. So I sent it to friends of the group. Well, one of the friends sent it to 20 of her friends, and Joycetta, and I'm saying to myself, well, you know, you really need to renew your membership. You're a friend of the group, and you're really not supposed to take the newsletter and send it out, but hey, so many good things are coming out of it. Okay. Well, she's included Joycetta. And Joycetta, and I didn't sign my name to the article because I'm the editor and I include so many other pieces. I just try to balance it out and not put, I have a lot of content. So if I ask folks for articles and they don't give them to me, I'm like, oh, well, I have enough to put in there. So I put JCG. And it was hilarious because Joycetta was emailing me to say, hey, I need to know who this person is that wrote this article. Can you get them in touch with me? And I'm like, hi, it's me. And so then she was like, well, can you call me? And I called her and we spoke three times that day for almost like an hour and a half each time. And then she came back and she told me about you and what you were doing. And she was like, you got to do this. But what really moved me was she read my piece and she said, I felt every word that you were writing. So she's always going to be near and dear to me because we connected. We established a relationship. And then some of the experiences I had with writing about this newfound discovery I'm going to tell you about, I was a little uncomfortable telling her about them because to me, I have a friend, her name is Dr. Evelyn McDowell, and she runs a program called Sons and Daughters of the U.S. Middle Passage. And what that program is about, an organization rather, is if you've been able to trace your enslaved ancestor, it gives you an opportunity. It's a lineage society where you can document it. They provide a certificate. And it's a way to network and just talk to other people who have found the same information and to share stories. Mm. And so one thing that Dr. McDowell says is this work is spiritual. And I told her, I said, I'm using that. I will acknowledge that I'm using it and it's from you and it's your quote, but it's true. And since I've been using that quote, everything about my research, all of the things that happen, it's like this connection thing that happens. And so Joycetta and then you, and then on Sunday, I had an opportunity to share about Willoughby. We're going to get to her one quick second about Willoughby. And I prayed, when I found Willoughby, I prayed, I said, I want an opportunity. It's not about me, but I want an opportunity to share her story. And the moment I said that, opportunity after opportunity has been presenting itself. So on Sunday, I did a Zoom cast, my first one. I've spoken at libraries and churches, but this was my first time me personally speaking and doing a presentation on Zoom. And I was a little nervous about it. And I was like, I just felt you can do it. You can do it. And I did it. And the response that blew me away, and the one that is so emotional for me, this woman was in her car driving, listening to it. And she said to the person who was hosting it, she said, make sure you let her know. I thought it was intelligent. I thought it was riveting. I thought it was moving. So I took that quote and I made like a Facebook post for it because I was overwhelmed by this woman's response. And so it was confirmation for me to keep telling her story and to keep sharing. And then the next thing I know, I'm getting an email from you to say, okay, so when can you chat? So here this is. And then on top of this, I'm talking to you. I have another opportunity on September 3rd. There's a woman, her name is Bernice Bennett, and she does a blog talk radio, and she works for the National Archives. So September 3rd, I'm going to be on her program.
Oh my gosh.
And it's going to be a podcast. It's going to go on iTunes. She said, I'm telling you now, it's going to go everywhere. And just last night, I was talking to someone, and I said, that's not me. Like, I like doing this, but I really don't like being out there. I actually created a blog and it's private. I won't put it out there. And so I was like, okay, I got to deal with that. I really got to try to get through this because I want to share my ancestors' stories. And so now this thing with Bernice finished. So she said, I'm going to need your Facebook page information, your blog information. And so that was that pull and tug to say, okay, it can't be a secret anymore. You have to put it out there.
That's right. And not keeping it under a bushel, which you haven't been keeping it under a bushel, but it's just the bushel keeps getting pulled away. And then there you are, you know, let the light shine out there.
I don't know what your faith is, but in the scriptures, there is a scripture that talks about like who has a light and you take it and you put it under a bushel. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to put it out. So my main concern is that I don't want any of this to be about me. I want it to be about my ancestors. So the title of my blog, which I created in May, is My Ancestors Speak. I don't want to be the one that's seen. They didn't have a voice, so I feel that they selected me because I'm the only person in my family on my maternal and my paternal side, maternal and paternal side, doing the research. And I personally feel that God and my ancestors said, she's the one that's supposed to tell the story. She's the one that will be dedicated and will give voice to it. And so that's why I have the title of my blog as My Ancestors Speak. And as of tomorrow, it's not going to be private. I'm going to make it public. And with all of that, I want to tell you about Willoughby.
Oh, please do. Oh, my goodness. Now, okay. I just want to say I enjoyed your introduction because that helped put the pieces together. And just really, the way that you explained how you're not a very like public person, that makes complete sense in that this story now has that ability to just rise up. And to your question about faith, I was raised Roman Catholic my whole entire life. And then I led youth group for Lutheran kids, sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. Can't believe I survived that. And I consider myself today Christian in general. Okay. So I know that passage and I chose that.
So I was like, there's something there. Okay, so with Willoughby, my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, her birthday is the 4th of July. And so every 4th of July, my family and I travel to go see her and wish her a happy birthday. 4 or 5 years ago, doctors were like, oh, she's not going to make it. We're at a point now that we're just like, when they call me to tell me that, okay, yes, you can really come, she's gone, that's when I believe that she's not going to make it, because longevity runs in her family. Her name is Celia Woodbury Cross. And again, she just turned 97 on the 4th of July. And she is named after her father's sister, who was also Celia, and lived to be 113 years old. And when she passed away, they put it in the newspaper. So longevity on that line runs in the family. So I called her to wish her a happy birthday and spoke with my aunt, who I always tell her, kiss her on the forehead. If I can't be there, I always say, you have to kiss her on the forehead and say, this is from Janice. So we're doing that. And then my aunt says, you have cousins in Pennsylvania. And I'm like, I do. Now, my aunt never talks about genealogy. It's not her thing. She'll typically answer any questions that I have, but she does. So out of the blue, she just starts talking about people. And I'm saying, okay, this is interesting. So I said, well, I'm at my computer. I'll just bring up my ancestry.com account. But prior to that, I have to kind of set the stage a little bit. 4 years ago, we were on vacation in South Carolina and I wanted to go to Charleston. Nobody in my family wanted to go. They were like, no, we don't want to go. I was like, no, I have to go to Charleston. So other people were like, well, why do you want to go to Charleston? I was like, I don't know. I just had this pull and drive to go to Charleston. So I called my niece and my nephew and they said, okay, well, we'll come and take you. And they came to the hotel, picked me up. And I'm going to go through this because it can be kind of lengthy. So I'm giving you the short version.
Yeah.
We go to Charleston. We tour. I'm like, oh, wow, this is really nice. But then I'm like, what's that smell? And they're like, oh, they have horses. I was like, okay, that's interesting. So then we end up by the slave mart that's in Charleston. And that was very moving for me. I'm like, okay. So as we're leaving, I had this overwhelming sense and presence like, wow, she came to see us today. And I couldn't tell anyone because I was like, I don't want them to think I'm crazy. But it was this release, like I was supposed to go to Charleston. I came, I went by the slave mart. And then I had this overwhelming feeling of like peace, like, okay, didn't think anything of it. Now, when I started my research 25 years ago, I met a woman online. It was before you have as like Ancestry being as popular and all of the different ways to network and Facebook. And there was a woman that said, when you come back to South Carolina, I want to take you somewhere. I said, okay. So where does she take me? She took me to Francis Marion University, where there are two slave cabins on the property. So I was kind of overwhelmed by it. I took pictures. I still have the pictures. And I'm like, wow, okay. 20-something years ago. Move up to going back and forth to South Carolina, marrying South Carolina, doing the research, going to the archive center. I met a man. His name is Maxie Foxworth. And Maxie really helped me find a lot of documentation. If I got stuck on something, one time I was stuck on a name and I was frustrated and my husband, my daughter were in the car and he was like, what's wrong? I said, well, I can't find this information. I have to go. We have to go. And he said, well, who are you looking for? I said, Bige. She said, oh, Bige is short for Abijah. And then he pulls out the book and shows me and gives me like 15 additional names to work with. Okay.
Yeah.
After that, fast forward to 4th of July on Saturday, before I called my grandmother, there was a man, his name is Joseph. I keep calling him James. His name is Joseph McGill. And he runs this project and it's called the Slave Dwelling Project. And so he goes around to different sites in the country and he sleeps on plantations. He actually works for Magnolia Plantation in Charleston, South Carolina. He has a Facebook page. He has a website. But on Saturday, before I called my grandmother, he happened to be live. And I was like, wow, I've never seen him go live before. So I started interacting with him and I was like, oh, you got to come to New Jersey. And he's like, hi, Janice, I've been there before. Now, this is through the computer. Yeah. And he goes, oh, I've been there before, but I need to come back and I'm doing something, you know, follow my page. Okay, fine. So we have documented on that Facebook feed where I interacted with him before I called my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Call my grandmother, speaking to my aunt. And then I hear, she's giving me these names. I'm in ancestry.com. And all of a sudden, as I'm putting the information in, different names started populating. So I'm like, well, what is this? And I'm going, oh, I've seen that before. So no, that's not mine. Doesn't make sense. And then I'm asking my aunt, I'm like, have you heard these names before? And she said, well, they sound kind of familiar, but I'm not sure. And I kept looking and looking, but I was able to document that these names belong in my tree. So the cool thing was I went back two additional generations. I was all excited about that. But then it went up one more to Willoughby. And I'm like, who's Willoughby? Like, okay, I've seen these names before, but what is this Willoughby? And you could see that definitely she belonged to them, this family, and she was born in 1808.
Oh my goodness, wow.
So that's enough right there. But then there was a note, and I had seen the note before, and I kept saying, that does not apply to my family, doesn't apply to my family. The note specifically said, if you are connected to this person, go look up a segment done by PBS, and it's called The History Detectives. Now, you have to understand, I used to watch that show faithfully. This one episode, I never saw it. So I go online, I type it in, and there's a transcript that comes up. Three paragraphs in, I start reading the transcript, and I'm like, oh my goodness, no, this is not happening to me. So then I said, okay, what's the likelihood that they would have this segment online? Same PBS, it was a popular show, it should be online. The segment was online. And I started watching it and tears just started rolling down my face. And the crazy thing to me, it will always be like crazy or serendipity or surreal. There was a woman in Wichita, Kansas. She was cleaning her attic and came across her grandfather used to collect Civil War memorabilia. And she's going through it. And the last document is a slave bill of sale. And who is it for? It's for Willoughby. She wrote into the history detectives to say, can you research her and what happened to her and if she survived slavery? The history detectives decided to take it on. Where was the first place? Now, mind you, all of this is happening on Saturday. I never went to bed. I was up until 5 o'clock the next morning because I was writing 5 pages worth of information. And I have that to share with you. I have it all organized and to share it. Where did they start? Charleston, South Carolina, the slave mart that I went to 4 years ago. And I'm watching this like, this is not happening. Where was the second stop that they went to? Francis Marion University, which 24 years ago, this woman, out of the goodness and kindness of her heart, said that she would take me to. So that's where they are. Who is the person that's with the television host at Francis Marion University? Joseph McGill from the Slave Dwelling Project, who I have been watching him live for the first time. He can attest to this. And I've spoken to him. I called him. I said, I need to talk to you. And he called me back that next Sunday morning and he said, oh, I remember that program. He was in it. And I said, that person is my fifth great grandmother. Okay. So then they're there, right? And he's talking, and Willoughby was sold at 17 years old. And they kept saying that she was alone. And that was rare because normally it was a mother and child, or you had siblings, this family was together, that she was alone being sold. And so then the question became, was she being sold for breeding purposes? Was she being sold for her enslaver's personal use? Or, you know, those questions came up. And that's when tears were just coming down my face, because here she is, 17 years old. I can't imagine my child being taken away from me and this is happening to them. Okay, that's the second part. The next part is they say, okay, well, we need to go they went from Charleston to Florence, where Francis Marion University is. The next place that they go to is the Archive Center to meet with Maxie Foxworth, who is someone I know. Like if I'm on vacation and I see him in a Walmart, I'm like, hey, Maxie, how are you? Like, I know him. And I'm going, this is not happening. This is not happening. And honestly, that happened on the 4th of July. Even now, having this conversation, like I can talk about it now without crying. On Sunday during the interview session, I was just crying. I started crying all over again. But all of that happened on the 4th of July on my grandmother's birthday. And so I was up until 5 o'clock in the morning typing and writing going, I don't understand how this is happening. So what I say is, and the way I title it is that, although I was talking to my aunt, I felt like Willoughby found me. That yes. I normally do research and I'm finding people, but Willoughby found me. Yes. So the answer to the question that the woman from Wichita, Kansas initially asked as far as the slave bill of sale was, what happened to Willoughby? So Willoughby was enslaved, and I have the documents because PBS, when I found out about it, I was like, I got to get in my car and go to South Carolina because I need these documents. I need all of the documents that were discussed in the program. Well, PBS is amazing. All of the documents are online. They have it listed in the segment. So I actually have a work document where she worked for a dollar and she was working. The thing is that she was sold, but she was also sold. You see in the records that.
Are you there?
On. You know what? My screen is a touch screen, so I have to be very careful. There we go. I'm going, what happened? Okay, I apologize. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
So I actually have, and I'm going to email you. I have everything in an email to send to you. Yeah, it's not showing up here, but I have all the documents.
I can see you. Yeah, I can see the paper. I can just see your face, but know that this. So, but to the point of like all of the documents that they had, so they did a bunch of this research that you weren't even aware of. And the fact that it came to you on the 4th of July and the intersection with Slave Dwelling Project. I mean, and I know that project. I am familiar with that project. It is incredible. It is. Yes. So why do you think it was that? Was it because it was your grandmother's birthday? Do you think your heart was just open at that? Like what made it happen this 4th of July, this grandmother's birthday? What do you think?
Okay. I do feel that as a person of faith, I feel that it was the appointed and anointed time for me to find it. And when you look at when that segment aired, and I have it all in the email to send to you, that segment aired in 2012. I don't think I was supposed to find it then or know about it or even see it. And again, even if I had seen it, it would not have stood out to me. And people have asked me over the years, do you have any family out of Charleston? Like, no, all of my family is in Marion, South Carolina, Mullins, Columbia, Florence, never Charleston. And now I can say, well, she was there. Because in 1808, it was against the law to import slaves. It was supposed to stop, but people were still doing it, but you weren't supposed to do it. So the whole thing was, you have to work with the folks that are here, basically. So that's where all that breeding came in from to get additional slaves. I just feel that 4th of July, my grandmother, and also because I was upset about not being able to go to see her. I felt like it was a gift to me. I felt as if it was like, this is the time that she's supposed to get it. And it has really, I'm still, even though I'm talking to you, even though I had the interview on Sunday, even though I've posted this on Facebook, I posted on a site that says I've traced my enslaved ancestors. It still does not feel real to me. I feel like literally as if I'm floating, like somebody has to pinch me that I really have this. Every time I look at the documents, it's emotional. And not only that, so to answer that question, I feel that this was providence, that it was supposed to happen now. No sooner, no later, that it was supposed to happen now and on the 4th of July. And I just think that there's so much significance in my grandmother being, she is a firecracker. Well, she used to be a firecracker, but she's the person that took my son fishing for the first time. And she's the person, when I started my research, I would talk to her and she would answer all of my questions. I don't know if Joycetta told you, but for her second great grandmother on her paternal line, she was enslaved. And there is a slave, I don't know if you're familiar with the Works Progress Administration. They have that whole slave narrative collection. Well, I have one for my 97-year-old grandmother. I have one for her grandmother, which is my second great grandmother, who names the enslavers, who names her parents, which puts me back additional generations. So all of this with my grandmother is just like unbelievable. And one of the quotes that I started using is ancestors, daring to go back as far as possible to embody both the joy and the jarring places of being a descendant of people who know persistence and persecution. I am reflecting on what it means for the descendant in me to meet the ancestor in me. And so I lament to me, which is where I was crying. I rise, rejoice, and write. Now, I don't consider myself an author, but I love to write. And when I write and share it with people, it's interesting the feedback that I'm getting. For instance, like I said, Joycetta said, I felt every word that you wrote. And so last month, I have about 4 books that I eventually want to write. With the family history that I've done, I can't put them all in one book. And so it just keeps coming to me, when are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? So every Tuesday, I make sure I write 2 to 3 pages.
Good.
And I'm doing it in essay style so that once I'm done, I can sort everything out and figure, okay, these essays need to go together. These need to go together. And then I'll do it. But I have to, there is that pull internally to do this. So I think with this being providence and an anointed and appointed time, I feel like that's why I have that pull to write. And with Willoughby, when she found me, I could not go to sleep. I kept trying or I was like, okay, I'll come back. It's like, no, keep writing. And so I ended up writing, it's a total of 4 pages. I do have a graphic in, and I'm going to send that to you. So I put together, I have a document with, this is from ancestry.com that I'm just trying to get it. It shows how I'm connected to Willoughby. Okay, I think that's important. And then I have the documents that talk about her being sold. She and her husband, Essex, were sold for $1,100. And then they had a child. They had a child that was sold for $400 or $850.
Oh my gosh.
And then his second wife, because Willoughby dies, is listed here as well. I just found this out. Her name is Rose, and Rose was sold for $850.
Oh.
So I feel that the reason that I was selected to do it is that I'm a feelings person. And my friends, they tease me. And they're like, you cry over everything. My one friend, she was like, you're such a waterhead. I was like, I never heard that before. Don't call me a waterhead. But I am, because I feel everything deeply. For my family, for my children. And they're like, Mom, why are you crying at church? They're like, they're careful in how they do things because they know, they're like, oh my gosh, she's going to cry. And so when I don't cry, I'm like, I didn't cry. But I feel that God made me that way to be able to feel and empathize with people and to make a difference. And although I say I'm very, very private and I don't like to be out there, I used to be extremely shy and no one believes me when I tell them that. They're like, no way. And I said, well, over the years, I've embraced who I am and who God has made me to be. So given certain things, I have no problem getting up and speaking. But genealogy, I'm very, very passionate about it. No problem. And I used to always think, I do prepare my notes and I have notes. And it's really funny because I prepared this long document to be able to go in order and not be wordy. And I got everything all organized and I'm going, you didn't print your document. But I think that was meant to happen, that I'm supposed to share authentically from my heart. Once again, the woman that I had to interview with on Sunday, I was like, okay, well, what are your questions? And she's like, oh, well, you know, you can just share and you can talk. And I was like, okay, you don't have questions? And she's like, no. And I was like, okay. And again, inside it was just speak from your heart. And it went extremely well. And the feedback was amazing. So what happened to Willoughby, just to circle back to her, is that once she was free, she bought 160 acres from the family that enslaved her. And so at the end of the segment, the woman from Wichita, Kansas, found that out. And they did try at that time to find descendants. They located some, but they weren't interested. I said, well, they didn't find me because I would have been there. I would have taken a vacation day, days, and I would have been there. So one of the things that I'm trying to do now, I have not been successful, is I'm trying to find the woman that sent the segment in to let her know that it was meant for her to find that, because she could have found it and thought, okay, you know, all right, this isn't his collection. She didn't do that. And what she did is a gift for me. And I feel that that's a part of this whole time frame and finding things. And then here's Janice, 2012, now in 2020, I come along and find this segment. And I went into Ancestry.com. I had a hard time going back to find this guy, but there was the man that put that note in there near her name. I went back and I thanked him. I said, you have no idea what you have done for me in terms of my genealogy and research, because there's a big difference of, oh, Willoughby was my fifth great grandmother, to, oh, Willoughby is my fifth great grandmother, and there's a whole segment, a 14 minute segment on her. So with that being said, it's just amazing how all of this just came together.
Well, and thinking about like the collective nature of people contributing to Ancestry, and like that's how you can make these connect. You don't even know these people, and they're connecting or helping you to connect these dots. And as far as the segment, the person, I'll see what I can do to reach out to her. I have a friend who works in PBS here, and I'll see if she can, you know, go behind the scenes and figure out some details.
I emailed one gentleman who, there were three like main people that used to conduct the interviews. So one of the guys, he works at Temple University. I emailed him, I reached out to him via Facebook. I haven't heard back yet. And then the guy that was a part of the segment, and you'll see the lead guy for the segment, I left a message for him. I think he works at a university in Arizona, I'm not sure. But I left a voicemail message for him. I haven't heard anything yet. And then I just thought, you know what, however it's supposed to happen, it will happen. The woman, her name is Jeannie Hans, and you'll see her throughout the segment. She is an editor at Wichita, Kansas. So, but I think with COVID that folks may be working from home or not getting messages. I did leave a message for the publication that she's listed as an editor for. That was the 4th of July. I haven't heard anything yet, but I feel that when it's supposed to happen, it will happen. But I would like to thank her to say, I'm so glad you didn't just take that and put it somewhere and not do anything with it.
Yeah. And to your point about, you know, crying, you hit the nail on the head. It's the empathy that you have. Like you have empathy when you hear or read or when you see someone. And that's just so important, because it helps you to connect, and especially being a pastor's wife, that's part of your calling. Right. And I understand what you say about like people are shocked that you're shy. The same thing is said of me. They're shocked that I'm shy. And it's like, well, with my job as an educator, and I work at a university now. I used to do GED back in the day.
Oh, okay.
I used to do literacy in a factory before that. Mm-hmm. I have to talk and be in front of people, and I have to be the one that has the voice to talk. You know, it's not my preferred mode, but that's just what I have to do. So this story, though, it's so fascinating that it's just coming together right now. And when you mentioned 4th of July, I mean, what a celebration for you and for your grandmother just to find all of this information. And you've just done so much work with this, Janice. This is incredible.
When you see what I wrote, you'll see, like when you read it, you'll see the order that I shared it in. And you will feel the emotion, because I'm going, okay, well, hold on here. Remember this and wait. And so pretty much the way I shared it with you is the way I wrote it, but I had questions. I wanted to know, I wrote out questions for part two. It was in two parts. The first two pages I did on the first day, and then the second set of pages I did the second day. And it, so it's very quick. It's, where were you born? In Charleston, South Carolina, Africa, or the Caribbean? Mm-hmm. Who are your parents? And where did you last see them? How and why were you separated from your parents? Did you cry? And that's the part that normally makes me cry. How were you treated by the people who enslaved you? Did you and Essex decide to be a couple, or was the relationship or marriage forced? Were you ever reunited with your parents? Where is your final resting place, which I think I just found this week? Oh. Other than me, who are your descendants? So, excuse me, with some of the interesting things that have happened, about 5 years ago, my grandmother, as far as I can tell, all the research I've been doing, I've never seen her in anyone's tree. And so this one day I'm looking and I'm going, somebody has my grandmother, my grandmother's grandmother in their tree. And so I reached out to the woman and I was like, how do you know this person? And how? So my great, great grandmother and this person's great, great grandfather were siblings. And so when I found out about all of this, the first thing I was, it was like, okay, who's going to know? Who's going to appreciate this? And I reached out to her. And so she's been sharing it. Other people have been sharing it. On Facebook, I've had about close to 400 responses where people have just been going crazy. I had a woman in Canada reach out to me and she said, I believe that my family was a part of the enslavers. She lives in Canada and we have DNA matches in common. There's this program called GEDmatch. And she and I have 5 ancestors in common. I was talking to you about the interview that I have on September 3rd. Well, the woman that's going to do it, I sent her the link for the segment. She called me this morning. She said, I am on my way to a dentist appointment, but I need to talk to you for a few minutes. I said, okay, no problem. She said, first of all, would you be interested in doing it? I said, yes, absolutely. I said, this is something I pray for. She said, secondly, I believe I'm connected to Willoughby.
Oh my.
So she sent me, I told her, I said, I spoke with her twice and I said, okay, you're going to have to email me and then I'll reach out to you after work. I said, because if I start this, I'll probably end up getting fired because if I start researching something, that's it. So I try to restrain from doing anything genealogy related during the day. And it's the same area, the same two areas. And the first place that Willoughby lived in, her ancestor lived, she said, 2 pages in the census records, but the same town. So more than likely, there's definitely going to be a connection, and we're going to try and figure that out tonight. And that's when I said, you can't make this up. Not only that, Sunday, during the interview, at the last minute, I said, you know what? Let me invite a couple of people. But the page and the group, it's private. So you just can't go on. You have to go on and join, and then you can see the segment. So at the last minute, I invited one person. And prior to that, the other person, I had invited them a long time ago, and they were on it, and they loved it. During the segment, or shortly before the segment, she posted a picture of her grandmother. The person who's my cousin that lives in New York, during the segment, afterwards saw the picture, joined the group, saw the picture and said, is that so-and-so? This person who's a member of my group, the ancestor that she put the picture up, and the person who's my cousin from New York, who I asked at the last minute, their second great grandmothers are siblings.
Oh my goodness. Just see that kind of just bringing people together. You're just convening all these.
Well, the one lady said, I'm calling you the connector.
You are a connector. You're a group connector.
I saw the picture and somebody, and so I saw them talking and I only saw the last line in passing and they said, oh, look what you've done. And I thought, oh, this is so cute. She liked the picture. And I just put a heart on it and I went on about my business. Well, last night, and I have nothing else. I won't share anything else after this because I could go on forever. Last night, I saw that the two of them were chatting on their page. Like we're all connected. So I was like, oh, that's so nice that they, you know, they're talking. So then I'm like, well, wait a minute, what are they talking about? And then I'm seeing, oh, hey, cousin, how are you, cousin? And I'm going, It's 11 o'clock at night last night. The woman's name is Tanisha. We're very close. I called her. I was like, I'm confused. What's going on? She said, our great grandmothers were siblings. I said, you can't make this up.
You're thinking, she's calling her cousin. Why is she calling her cousin? That doesn't make sense.
Like a friendly endearment. Like, yeah. Like, oh, wow. And they are literally cousins and second cousins, two times removed. I'm not, that part I'm still figuring out. But this whole thing has just been, I don't use the word mind blown. My mind is blown, but it really is mind blowing. And I said to the woman last night, I said, it's overwhelming. I have so many notes that I literally have to step away from it. Every now and then I just have to step away because I'm like, it's happening too fast. I can't process it all. And then the woman that I had to interview with on the third, she said last night when I sent her the segment, she reached out to me late. I sent it to her late. She said, I do want you to know I did not go to sleep last night. She said, McWhite, I know the name. I know the name. And she went and found McWhites in her ancestry and DNA. So more than likely we're related.
That's incredible. I cannot wait to hear more about that. You have to keep me posted. I'm not on Facebook, by the way. I've never been on it, so I miss out on a lot of things. I wanted to say, while it's in my head, the fact that this happened on the 4th of July, so I'm in Rochester, and of course, this was for some time the home of Frederick Douglass.
Right.
And he gave, in 1852,
for the 4th of July to...
Let me tell you this part. You may know this, and if you do, I'm sorry to say that you don't know this, but he gave that speech downtown here in Rochester at this place called Corinthian Hall, which no longer exists, and it's a parking lot now, and there's a Holiday Inn on that street corner. So, but it was a building, I think it was put up in 1820s or 30s, and it was up until the early 20th century when it was raised. Well, that site, Corinthian Hall, and just think of like your typical large scale building, like an armory or something like that. Well, he gave it at that location on July 4th of 1852, but he was commissioned to do it by, and I'm getting chills, the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Sewing Society, which was white women, but they were a sewing society. And that just, when you said you crochet and you work with fiber and yarn, that was just connecting to me in my head, just this way in which all signs point to July 4th as this way.
I did not know that about the sewing ladies. I have to look that up. I didn't know that.
And just think, like, you've given Willoughby independence now. You've given her, on Independence Day, you've given her independence as a story, as a way to connect, and as a way for so many people to learn her story. I mean, you're doing the heavy lifting that the PBS show, awesome, but you're actually doing the labor. I mean, this is amazing, Janice. And it's because of COVID that you couldn't see your grandmother, right. You know, and all of these bits and pieces, but this is incredible to me. I'm astonished.
It's still I believe it. And then as I was typing, I said, I feel like I'm typing this for someone else, mm-hmm. but it's for me. And one of the posts that I made, I said, out of my 25 years of researching, out of any brick wall that I've encountered, this makes it all worth it. All of the money, all of the traveling. And the crazy thing is, if my husband was walking around listening, he started first. He was doing this. And one day he said, you know, you should do your family history. And I said, well, I know who they are. And he said, well, who are they? I said, you know, so my parents and then the grandparents. Okay, fine. Great grandparents. Well, don't know. And so that started me. One name, I was like, well, I think, but I wasn't sure. And then once I started, that was it. I was hooked, and I've been doing it ever since. And one of the things is, on both sides of my family, they never did family reunions. And so when we started, I said, we have to have family reunions. And I always make sure that there's something for the kids to do and that they are engaged, and the same thing with the teenagers. And I said to everyone, I said, one of the things my heart's desire is I don't want anyone to feel the way I did when I was a kid. And that was in South Carolina, thinking that I don't have a normal family like everybody else has. It's just me left with my grandma, and I felt alone. And that sense of connectedness, the only connectedness that I had to hold anything together was through my adopted, the woman who adopted my mother, who was so, so good to me, and is a lot of the reason why I am the way that I am now, because of her. And so doing the research and watching all of this stuff just like expand, I said, I never want any other child to feel like they don't come from somewhere, that they don't belong. And so I embrace them. I have more fun with the kids than I do with the adults. I spend time with them, but I want them to come and to know that you are loved, that you're cared for, and you come from something and from people who were about something. And everybody knows, every family has it. You have the good, you got the crazy, you got some of everything. But overall, my family is very loving, very kind, and supportive. And they're funny. They're hilarious. If they don't know something, everybody's just like, call Janice, she knows. Call Janice, she knows, or she will find out. And I will, and I do.
Oh, my gosh.
So with all of that, this is what I do. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And if I did not have to work, this would be that one thing that I could do for free, or, you know, pay me, or if I become independently wealthy, this is the one thing that I would do. Because I'm telling you, when I found out about Willoughby, the first thing that came to my mind was, I was like, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to South Carolina now. And it was like, okay, come back to reality. You're not quitting your job.
Unfortunately, at least not right now. But
and then PBS had everything available for me, because I was really going to go there and get those documents. But they have everything online for me. Everything is there.
So let me ask you this one question. I love what you said about family and like coming from some place. Mm-hmm. I come from a large family. Like my mom and dad had a lot of kids. Okay. And I'm the youngest of nine, but my mom passed a couple of years ago, and when she passed, and several of my family members have passed away from various things. Right. But the point of all this is, we're not a family anymore, and I miss it. And so hearing you talk about that connectedness, that's very important, and it's important to you, and because of you, Janice, it's only because of you that it will, you know, meld everyone to be connected. And it's beautiful, because it's so important. And as a young person, to be connected and to feel like you are here and you matter, that's so important.
Right.
I just love
it. And when you don't have it, or when it's not there anymore, sometimes I think that if we sense it and we feel it the most, that maybe, if possible, we have some type of call or commitment to try to be different, or to try to have folks over for dinner, or to try to do games where it's not so, you know, there's no tension, or to make an attempt to do something, because at least you can say, you know what, I tried. And then if it doesn't work there, then you build it. You know, God has given me people that I don't have the best relationship with, you know, with certain people in my family, with one mainly my mom. And that's very, very hard for me. And I've tried and I tried and I tried. But God has given me people that are like mothers to me. He's given people to me. My father's deceased, so he's given people who are like fathers to me. Or I always wanted a big sister. I never had a big sister. I'm the oldest. So he's given me people that are like sisters to me. So sometimes whatever's lacking, God will give it to you, and it works, and you find peace. And there's a scripture that says, deal with all men peaceably as much as is within you. So if somebody's bringing something negative, you put the positive out. And then if it's not working, then you remove yourself from it. So Joycetta, we ended up speaking three times. And I told the person that sent the email to her with our newsletter, I said, she's like this old sage soul that's soothing and comforting, and things that I didn't want anybody to think that I was crazy or off about, experiences, spiritual experiences I've had during my research, I could tell her, and she said, it's okay, I understand. She had the same experience. There were two experiences that I was a little antsy about sharing with her, and she had them. So my friend sending that newsletter, that was meant to happen.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I've never met Joycetta like in person because of COVID. And I told her when we talked last week, I said, Joycetta, I'd just go on the number 2 Empire Express and schlep myself down to where you are in Nassau County. But because of COVID, I'm not doing that. But I just felt so connected to her. And I understand what you're saying, like just the way in which she has been brought because of this person forwarding that newsletter, she's been brought to you. And
it's very soothing and comforting. And I was just like, wow.
Wonderful. Let me ask you this. So if Willoughby were alive today,
wow,
what would you say to her? So if she were like sitting, you know, there's no COVID, Willoughby's alive, and you know, she's sitting in the room with you, what would you say to her? And you can think for a second.
Oh, I have it. One would be refusing to die. You refuse to die. There's a paragraph in a piece that I'm going to send you, and she refused to die. Number 2, thank you for surviving. For surviving. Because there was emphasis on her being alone and sold twice. Thank you for surviving because you survived, I'm here. So I would say thank you. I would say I honor you. I celebrate you. And then I would probably like spoil her like with flowers and okay, now we have to go somewhere. And then I would treat her like a queen. Mm-hmm. And so to me, she is a queen. I refer to her as Queen Willoughby. And just the name alone, Willoughby, it was just like, you know, I do the Zoom calls for church, I told you. And so the first Sunday I found out about it, I have it where I'm the host and you see the church logo and everything. And then I have it where I can hear it because you can't have two things going together. So the main computer is completely shut down. So I put Willoughby. I put my name as Willoughby. And I've been practicing W's, like fancy W's. And I said, okay, if I ever do something with crocheting and a business and all, it would have W, it would have her name incorporated into it some way. So or I would say thank you.
Willoughby Designs, like your whole aesthetic could be, yes, Willoughby Designs. I could just see it. Like, let me ask you, part of the, I appreciate what you said about her, about what you would say to her about refusing to die, mm-hmm, and thanking her. That what you've done is you've really made her story so much more visible and relevant. And like you've brought it to the surface, but it also has so much life to it. And, you know, it's hard to hear that she was sold and to think of being alone. And I think in so many ways that perseverance, that determination, that, you know, I think people, when they come to the COVID archive, they're going to connect with that. When you said connecting, you're a connector, Janice. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just, it's so amazing. And I'm overwhelmed.
I feel that she was special. Why was she so special at that time? I don't know, even though she was enslaved. But in her enslaver, the last person that enslaved her, his name was Stephen McWhite, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, and then McWhite. M-C-W-H-I-T-E. And last week I found out that the family name was actually Musselwhite. So how they went from Musselwhite to McWhite, I haven't seen anybody explain that yet. But his family, his descendants have trees as well. And I thought, wow. So in his will, he's preparing his will and basically says, if anything happens to him, that Willoughby and Essex, and Essex, his name is listed as 6 and sire and so on. So in his will, he says that Essex and Willoughby and Lydia was one of their children, that if anything happens to them, they're to go to his sister. And then they name 5 or 6 other slaves and they say, okay, well, you can sell them.
Wow.
And then at the end of slavery, she's buying property from them. So I'm saying, okay, was one of her children his child? What was it that they looked out for them, that they kept them together? And so I'm trying to determine whether the first person that sold her, his name was Asa Brown, out of Charleston, South Carolina. And then the next person that sells her, his name is McDaniel, or Daniel is the surname. And then she ends up with the McWhites. So they kept Essex and Willoughby together. So my whole question is, what was it there that, even though they were enslaved, it just looked as if they were constantly trying to protect them and make sure that they were okay? And then, I mean, really think about that whole piece where slavery is ending and she buys 160 acres worth of land from him. The last part is where they bought the property. I'm convinced that we own a house in South Carolina. I don't think it's that far from where our house is in South Carolina.
Oh my goodness.
It's in Marion, South Carolina, and I don't think it's far away. So I'm going to reach out to the guy, Maxie, that's in the segment to say, this is where our property is. How far is it from where Willoughby purchased her property?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. And even the fact that it's in the same general location.
Yes. Marion County is big, but Mullins and Marion are not huge. And where they went, like out in the country part, is out in the country part where we have our property. So I may be able to find that online, like exactly where their property was. And this is not I found already a property that we bought that my aunt said, oh, you want to buy a house in South Carolina? I know somewhere you can go. And where it is named after some of my ancestors. They lived in that area. And I had no idea about that at the time. I just found that out about a year ago.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm convinced that the property that Willoughby brought and purchased is, I just feel like it's going to be close.
Oh my. And you have the historical chops to pull this off, Janice. I mean, you are just, so I'm a historian, but we talk about people who work with the public and do history, not teaching it in the academy, but do history for real, are public historians. You're a public historian. You do genealogy and you're creating content that's really personal and deeply important to you, but you're also creating it for the public by sharing it in the newsletter. And you are an amazing researcher and genealogist. This is incredible. I mean, some of the bits and pieces that you're able to pull together to actually make sense out of this story, this is remarkable. In terms of writing or like making books out of this, I think you have a very good opportunity not only to share your story, but to also, even if it's just one little segment of that story, to say kind of how you were on this journey. I mean, it's the journey of you as well as the journey of Willoughby and Essex. And it's really amazing. And it would be really worthwhile to read.
I sent it to 4 people. One is Dr. Evelyn McDowell. She's a professor at Rider University. I sent it to Rick Murphy. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's an author. I cannot think of all of his books offhand, but he's the vice president of the genealogy group that I belong to, the national chapter. And he's out of Boston. He works in DC, but if you type his name, it's different. It's R-I-C, Rick Murphy. So I sent it to him and he came back, and as an author and someone who speaks and, you know, a history buff, he said, Willoughby's connected to you? My response was yes. And he said, you have to do something with this. Don't let it sit. He said he sees presentations, said he could see it being a book. He said, you have to do something with it. I said, I'm working on it. I am. And right now, everything else that I was working on, it came to a screeching halt. And my whole focus has been on her. Finding out just this week that they actually had a son, which was not mentioned. You hear about Lydia, but they had a son. And in Ancestry.com, the transcriber listed his name as Eric. And I almost missed it. And I said, oh my goodness. Parents, they put 6, which is what they called Essex, 6, and the mother Willoughby. So they had a son. And then the coolest thing was that it lists where he's buried. And where he's buried is like a little bit of a distance from Marion. And I'm convinced that where he's buried is where Willoughby and Essex are. Mm. So I just found that this week.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I can't wait to send you the email so you can see the documents at the end.
Oh, I would be delighted. And if you want me to upload those with the story, so what I'll do is I'll make the recording, and I'll give you a copy of our recording. I'll make the recording one item, and then I'll connect it to the any of the documents that you share with me. And then that way each one, I will be listed as creator with this because we're doing the interview. Everything else you'll be the creator of though.
That's fine.
This is, and just to think this is going to be such an amazing story for people to associate now with COVID and really just to bring it to light and to bring it to an entirely new audience. And just, I go back to what Rick Murphy said, and that is, Janice, this is a story that you can and should tell. And, and do people are, they would find reward in reading it because of the way you have connected these dots, and you have really just done an amazing job. I am so grateful for you sharing it. I really
am. Thank you again for the opportunity. Are you familiar with the museum that they're building in Charleston?
Go ahead.
One of the things that I'm going to do, because they have, someone told me that I can upload Willoughby's story. They have a section where you can upload the story. So I'm going to do that, but I want to, and I'm going to look into having it professionally done. Number one, I've already said I'm going to be there. I don't care if it's a mask, a body mask, or whatever. Once it opens, I plan to be there. Secondly, and again, I have ideas and things just happen. Willoughby is going to have an exhibit, whether it's when it opens or if it's later on down the road. There's going to be an exhibit for Willoughby. That's what I want to see happen.
I completely hear what you're saying. And what I would say to that is when you are ready for that exhibit, whether it's at the in Charleston or somewhere else, you come back and check in with me and I'll see if we can locate people that work, like students of mine who do exhibit design. Not that it would be a student oriented project. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm willing to pay for it. It has to be professional. I love doing poster boards, but I'm saying, nope, I see digital content. I see a silhouette of her because I doubt that there would be any pictures of her, but there has to be an exhibit. And again, it won't be just about me or Willoughby finding me. It would be an encouragement to other people that your ancestors are waiting for you to find them and to tell their stories. You're their voice. You are their voice. Do the work, because it is work. I can't tell you the number of people that I meet and they want everything like that. I said, there's some people that they're blessed and a lot of the work has been done, but the reward is in doing it and then making a major discovery. And that's how I feel that Willoughby said, okay, it's time for you to get something really big and major. And here's your moment. And I literally, because we're spirit beings, right? And I'm not into anything spooky, spiritual, anything like that, but we're spirit beings, but I literally feel that she's with me in spirit. Mm-hmm. I do. I feel that.
I can totally see how that's true. And the African American Museum that they're building in Charleston would be the perfect venue. This could also be at the National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. Dr. Lonnie Bunch, who directs all the Smithsonian's now, but he was the founding director. He would love this story because you're right. It demonstrates the hard labor that you've gone through to elevate and uplift her story. And it's inspiring, I think, to show what happens when you follow one person's story and how you can elevate and uplift that person, but at the same time, yourself and me and every other person that this story of Willoughby has touched.
You mentioned the museum in Washington. The person that they met with at the Charleston slave mart and had the initial document, she actually works for the museum in DC now. Because I was like, I gotta find her. And they said, oh, we think that she's at the museum in Washington, DC now. And I looked her up and she's at that museum now.
Oh,
I'm going to send her some information and hopefully she'll get back to me. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, and
I've been there before. The first time I went, I had been planning to go. And when I became vice president, the national organization, it's OGS, it's the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. And that's going to be in the note that I'm going to send you. So there was an email that was sent around and they needed a representative from each chapter. So the president at the time said, I can't go. And he sent out a list. He was like, can anybody go? So I just said, oh, I'll go. I thought it was something in New Jersey, New York. I hadn't read it all the way through. And then later on, I read it and I was like, oh my goodness. It's for the museum. It's for the new museum in DC. And so I got a young lady who, she's about 24, 25 at the time from our church. I said, can you go with me? We have to leave at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning because we have to be on time because they were giving us a private tour. Private tour. We had to be there at 9 o'clock. They had a breakfast for us. And then they had this whole big presentation and Lonnie Bunch was there and Family Search. And they were presenting records that have been transcribed for the Freedmen's Bureau. So I had everybody cracking up. And after this, I'm done. I had everybody cracking up. I said, because everybody else was there, like, okay, business as usual. This is nice, everything. I went and I really felt like I was a princess sitting in that auditorium. I was just sitting there and I was just like, it's just like, this is amazing. This is awesome.
Well, Janice, you are a princess. If Willoughby's the queen, then you would have to be a princess. That's right. That's totally right. That's the best note to end this on. I am so grateful. Is there any last, my last question is always, is there anything else you'd like to say? So,
yes, during COVID, it's important to experience and allow resilience to be your mantra. And what does resilience mean? The ability to mentally or emotionally cope with a crisis or to return to pre-crisis status quickly. And so my encouragement and exhortation, whatever, is to just believe that something better is coming and that we will all get through this together.
Thank you. Thank you so much for an uplifting message. Thank you, Janice. I so appreciate your time. I will stop the recording. Once it downloads, I'll send a link so that you can download it for yourself too. And I look forward to receiving whatever documents you're willing to
share. I'm sending it as soon as we're done, and you have to promise to stay in touch with me.
I will, because I want to stay in touch with you. You are a beaming light. I am so grateful to you and grateful that you're sharing Willoughby's story. Her story is amazing and you are equally amazing. And I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for your time.
And back at you. Likewise. Thank you so much for your time and I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Right, I'm sending the email now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.